From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. All this week, we've been hearing what it's like being a veteran in Iowa. Our reports from Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard have highlighted many facets from the lives of former soldiers, the mental anguish of war, concerns about health care, and the drive to lure young veterans into military organizations. Today, we wind up our week-long focus on veterans in Iowa with conversations about many of these topics. Are you a veteran living in Iowa? Tell us about your experience this hour. Our conversation starts right after this news. It's The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. All this week, we've been hearing what it's like being a veteran in Iowa. Our reports from Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard have highlighted many facets from the lives of former soldiers, the mental anguish of war, concerns about health care, and the drive to lure young veterans into military organizations among them. Today, we wind up our week-long focus on veterans in Iowa with conversations about many of these topics, and we invite you as veterans in Iowa to join our conversation. Are you a veteran living in Iowa? Tell us about your experience, what unique challenges you face. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org, our email. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us, first of all, Rob Dillard, Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard, who reported this tremendous Being in Iowa series this week. Congratulations, Rob, on another great installment of this Being in Iowa series.
Thanks, Ben.
First of all, if we recall, the first Being in Iowa focus was Latinos, being Latino in Iowa, now on veterans. Why this focus? Why this group?
Well, let me just remind people what the Being in Iowa series is. It's a brainchild of our news director, Jonathan All. We're taking subsegments of the population of Iowa and taking a look and asking basically the question, what does it mean to be a member of that group in the state? But we didn't want it to be just ethnic groups. We're going to be taking a look at some religious affiliations. But we started to think about veterans. They make up less than 10% of the Iowa population, but many of their physical and mental health issues, as more veterans return from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, of course, are very pressing issues. We're looking at some of the older veterans who have been the backbone of military service organizations like the American Legion and VFW, and what the future of those groups will be as they try to recruit more younger members into those groups. We've talked to veterans of all ages to find out what's on their mind. And we've also taken a lighter approach. We met members of an all-military veterans band. Iowa's the only state in the union that has a statewide veterans band, and so we listened to some of their music and talked about what it means. And talked to a POW from the Vietnam era who is a front row center for many of their concerts and what that means to him to have that music played for him and what memories it brings back to him. So we've just tried to cover all aspects of being a veteran in the state.
Rob, as you and I both know, working as journalists on the radio, one of the benefits of our jobs is you get to delve into something you didn't know quite as much about before you started. Now, what did you find most surprising or that you learned most about that you didn't know before?
I'm not sure that if I would describe it as a surprise, but a reminder. I grew up in an American Legion home, VFW home as well. My father fought during World War II. He was a navigator on bombing missions over North Africa and Italy. And so as I grew up, my social life centered many times around veterans and going to dinners at the American Legion Hall. And so they were a big part of my family's social life growing up. Well, I kind of got away from that as I grew older, and my current band of close friends, very few veterans out there that I know well. So as I reported the series this week, I was reminded of their loyalty, their bravery. And I was also shown once again how tight the bonds are between fellow veterans and their friendships. These bonds are stronger than anything I will ever know.
Rob Dillard, before we say goodbye to you, what's next in the series, Being in Iowa?
Coming up in July, the last week of July, from July 25th through the 29th, we'll be looking at what it means to be a Muslim in Iowa.
Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard, thank you for now.
You're welcome, Ben.
And we're talking about Being a Veteran in Iowa, a wrap-up of a week-long focus on veterans in Iowa. We heard there Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard. Now we want to invite two others involved in veterans affairs into our conversation. Dr. Steve Hagemoser is a psychologist at the Veterans Administration Central Iowa Healthcare System in Des Moines. He's an expert on post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. Dr. Hagemoser, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us, Tamara Woods, a doctoral student at the University of Iowa College of Education's Counseling Psychology Program. She teaches a class for veterans called Life After War. Tamara, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Hagemoser, start us off by telling us more about PTSD in Iowa. How many vets in Iowa have been diagnosed with PTSD?
Well, when you review the literature, range shows up 15 to 20% is commonly found. And that may vary as a function of just exactly what questions are asked. But that seems to be fairly consistent across the literature that I've read, that about one out of six-ish, one out of five-ish people who deploy to Afghanistan or Iraq will come back with some type of clinically significant mental health issues.
Do you have an idea what that is translated into numbers?
Let's see.
Roughly?
Well, certainly in the thousands.
Mm-hmm.
In
okay.
Iowa, certainly in the hundreds, maybe thousands.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing a trend increasing more with this disorder, or more just in a position to seek help and being diagnosed with it?
It's a very good question, because is the disorder increasing, or is public awareness of it increasing, and therefore then the people who are having some difficulties, are they more likely to seek out treatment? I've had very good experiences with the media in terms of just giving me the opportunity to get the word out that it is a disorder, that there is treatment for. So when you see more veterans coming in, it's a very good question, but it's tough to really know. Does that mean the disorder is getting worse, or are people just more willing to, I guess, seek treatment for it?
Mm-hmm. Remind us of the common symptoms displayed by those suffering from PTSD.
Okay. Well, in response to some type of traumatic event, and certainly at the VA, we focus on military combat. That's sort of the VA's specialty. But things like terrorist attacks or domestic violence or rape or natural disaster can also cause that. But the first major cluster of symptoms is what they call re-experiencing, which is some variant of I just can't get it out of my head. I can't escape it. Intrusive memories, nightmares. It gets them when they're awake and when they're asleep. In severe cases, it can even be akin to feeling like you're reliving the experience. Sometimes people get intense physical or emotional distress when they're reminded of something, say the smell of diesel fuel. Other common areas are increased arousal, unpleasant arousal, irritability, difficulty sleeping, poor concentration, feeling that you're on guard even when you're in a relatively safe place, feeling very jumpy and startled easily. There's also some depression-like symptoms of just activities that used to be interesting just are no longer interesting. You might say get up and go as got up and went, feeling detached from other people in your family, not being able to feel many feelings of closeness, feeling that there's little joy in your life, feeling that you're living on borrowed time, and then just a general avoidance of a lot of different things, avoiding your thoughts, avoiding your feelings, avoiding those memories. And then avoiding public places, anything that's going to seem like unfamiliar, a lot of stimulation. Most of the guys I work with just do not like high levels of stimulation, even when a part of them knows that they're in a safe place. But there's other parts of the brain that aren't so convinced.
Dr. Steve Hagemoser there. Tamara Woods, you are teaching a class for veterans at the University of Iowa called Life After War. We heard the litany of symptoms there and some of the causes of PTSD. Now, we know that certainly it's a minority of veterans, students coming to colleges that have PTSD. But what types of in this class, Life After War, you have a number of veterans, if not all veterans. Is that right?
They're all OIF, OEF veterans in the class.
Okay. How prevalent, then, are these types of symptoms described by Dr. Hagemoser, the PTSD symptoms, in your class?
Well, that's not something we really assess for in the class, but as Dr. Hagemoser pointed out, literature does indicate that folks are returning from these conflicts experiencing PTSD, you know, roughly 20%. You know, given that number, I would contend there are still a large number of folks who are experiencing subclinical symptoms of PTSD, so maybe not meeting full diagnostic criteria but still struggling with some of those things. In class discussions, people have pointed out feeling uncomfortable in some of those larger lecture halls where they don't know their surroundings very well. They're surrounded by civilians, experiencing maybe some re-experiencing with laser pointers or class discussion that surrounds the conflicts over in Iraq and Afghanistan. They're also experiencing a lot of increased arousal, really attending to all of the stimuli around them. So where is the window? Where is the exit? And that makes it very hard for them to pay attention to the lecture when they're attending to so many different things. And then, of course, avoidance. So a lot of veterans will just, if they go to a lecture hall, it's too full, it feels unsafe, they won't go.
And I imagine your class feels a lot different than a lot of other classes that the veterans take because they're among themselves. There are no outsiders, so to speak. And so does that get them to open up in discussion in a way that they perhaps wouldn't in another class?
Yeah, I've been teaching this class now for 3 semesters, and I'm continually amazed at the amount of camaraderie in the class and how quickly people bond. And this shows itself through the ease of class discussion, the amount that people are socializing outside of class, as well as the amazing group work that I see done on projects and presentations.
Dr. Hagemoser, when you hear Tamara Wood's work here, how does that help when we talk about the overall treatment for PTSD, talking about it, cognitive therapy, a part of the way to coping if not getting well?
Well, certainly that's very helpful, classes like what Ms. Woods is talking about, because I guess destigmatization is certainly anything that will be beneficial to treatment. Many of the folks that I work with, they get frustrated because they see somebody, like say, with a lost limb, and that person gets compassion and a lot of understanding from the general public. But sometimes then people will say, well, geez, nothing appears to be wrong with you. And they get a little bit frustrated. So when you have classes and information that will tell the veteran this is a real problem and there is treatment and there is understanding about it, there's research on it, there's treatments on it that have been backed up by the evidence, then, you know, it conjures hope.
You mentioned stigma attached to PTSD. We've talked about that over the years. It's always been a problem. Has this, though, become better as society becomes more aware of this disorder?
I believe so. One thing that's interesting to point out is that PTSD didn't officially exist until 1980. And for some of the World War II vets, by the thousands and thousands who suffered from those symptoms throughout the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, there wasn't even an official name for their suffering until decades after they had spent their time overseas. So now that there's an official diagnosis, then you can come up with treatments. And I think the label has both good and bad things about it. I should say good and potentially bad things about it. To the extent to which it gives people something to wrap their minds around, I think it's very good. Then people think, well, I'm not crazy, I'm not cuckoo, but rather this is a disorder. I can read the symptoms. I can read that there's treatments that are effective. But potentially then there can always be the downside of that label, which then is a stigma. Mm-hmm. But I think that for the most part, I think most people are relieved that there's some identifiable structure, some identifiable content of what it is that they're dealing with.
Interesting, though, this diagnosis as named as such has not existed for that long. But, of course, this disorder goes back a long time. Am I wrong in thinking that perhaps for World War I veterans, the shell-shocked was the title, and every major conflict seems to get its own name?
Yep. In fact, you could argue that back to the cavemen, essentially, that as long as warfare has been around, that probably the PTSD phenomenon has been around. I believe there's references to it in some ancient literature as well.
Exchange listeners, we want to hear from you, especially if you are a veteran living in Iowa. Tell us about the unique challenges you face. 1-866-780-9100, the exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Joining us now, Jerry is joining us, a World War II veteran. And I understand, Jerry, good afternoon, first of all.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you with us. Thank you for the service to our country. You served in World War II as a P-51 pilot, I understand.
That's correct. I graduated from flying school when I was 19 years old as a fighter pilot, and 3 weeks into my 21st year, I landed on Iwo Jima with a P-51, straight for the Marines, and on April 7th through August 14th, I flew 19 eight-hour missions over Japan in a P-51.
Did you or any of your colleagues suffer from anything what we would call today PTSD?
Well, I was told that I had battle fatigue and shell shock, but for 30 years after I came home in 1945 as a 21-year-old man, I was a lost soul. I didn't have any connection to anybody. I had no happiness in my life. I was married. I had 4 children. And seemingly, I was normal. When I lectured at the middle school here in Fairfield some years ago, a young boy asked me, "Were you wounded?" And I said, after much thought, yes, I was wounded, but not in a way that anybody could see or treat. So I suffered for 30 years. I had an addiction like most of the young men coming home, young women coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan. War is an addictive experience, and it's not a normal experience. And I at least knew my enemy. The young people today don't know who their enemy is, and garbage cans can contain IEDs, and it's just a horror. There are between 500 and 800,000 young veterans who have served in Iraq and Afghanistan who suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. And we could bankrupt the VA, giving them $300 to $1,000 worth of prescription drugs, which don't really help. They just mask the symptoms, and it's a catastrophe.
Jerry Yellen, I understand that you're involved with something called Operation Warrior Wellness that deals with PTSD, helping veterans in Iowa. Tell us briefly about that.
Well, my life changed in 1975 when my wife and I learned transcendental meditation. And recently, a young man, a friend of mine, committed suicide, and I contacted the David Lynch Foundation, which has been raising money to teach TM to indigent people, to homeless people, to incarcerated people, and to 150,000 school children around the world. There's a lot of evidence about what transcendental meditation does for us to relieve stress. So we started Operation Warrior Wellness as a division of the David Lynch Foundation, and we are teaching veterans transcendental meditation with magnificent results from the Vietnam vets, from the Iraqi vets, the Afghanistan vets, even some of the World War II vets like myself. According to Dr. Oz, who is a meditator, it relieves stress, relieves anger, relieves bad behavior. According to Clint Eastwood, who's on our board, who's been meditating for 40 years, this is a helpmate for anyone who's suffering, including the families.
Okay. Jerry Yellen, thank you for sharing those experiences and that venue for help. Dr. Steve Hagemoser, tell us about, expand on the idea of treatment today. We've talked about cognitive therapy. Jerry, they're talking about TM, meditation. Give us a larger view of how we treat PTSD most effectively these days.
Okay. Well, cognitive therapy is an option. Also, the meditation, I guess what sometimes is called mindfulness, which is basically what the gentleman talked about in terms of transcendental meditation, that allows people to ease anxiety and feel a greater sense of peace. A treatment that I have a fair amount of experience in and actually do is called prolonged exposure. And that's based on the presumption that trauma is horrible. People are going to understandably not want to think about those experiences. The problem becomes is that the harder you try to not think about something, the more that something is going to stay stuck at the center of your mind. So it's based on the assumption that if you get a veteran to talk about these experiences and talk in detail about what happened to them, even though it's intensely unpleasant at first, over time, if they keep at it, hence the name prolonged exposure, what starts out as, I don't think I can talk about that because it's just too awful, eventually gets to the point of, well, I guess I'd rather not talk about that because I've, as the old expression goes, been there, done that. And the words I love to hear more than anything else at this job are, every now and then, or I should say frequently, that after we've been doing prolonged exposure and a veteran has been talking about these intensely painful, horrible experiences, at some point they may say, Steve, I have to admit, after these 2 months of this, I'm starting to get bored talking about this event. And then I smile, and we know that they're kind of, they aren't cured, but if you will, they've turned a major corner.
Jerry Yellen, was there a turning point, a day you can tell us about that marked a turning point toward wellness for you?
Yeah, the turning point came in several years after the real turning point came when I watched the movie Platoon, and I saw the last scenes of the bodies being tossed into a big pit, and I cried. I cried for the first time in my life about what I had done when I was a young man. The experience of meditation, right away, I felt a different connection to my family and to myself. When I learned TM, within weeks, I had good experiences and better experiences, but I never cried. And when I saw Platoon in 1980 or 1982, somewhere in that area, and I cried, I spoke to my family for the first time about the war, about what I'd been through, what I did. I flew with 16 guys who didn't come back. Three of them were shot down and killed on my wing. And I saw the remnants of 28,000 bodies on Iwo Jima, 8 square miles of land. And there was no escaping what I saw from me for years and years and years. But when I talked and when I wrote books about it, I became well. Steve talks about lengthy exposure to speaking, and meditation is almost instantaneously. It's not what you think. It's how you think. It's how the body responds and how the mind-body connection, and you go to deeper levels. It's a non-religious technique for reaching the deeper levels of your consciousness, because we really lose your consciousness when you lose your soul when you're in combat, and you see the things that I see, you see the things that other veterans have seen in all the wars. And it goes back to the time in the beginning when the first guy killed somebody with a rock. In the 5,000 years that legend has it that David killed a giant with a slingshot and a pebble. The only progress that we've made is we've made better slingshots and better pebbles.
Jerry Yellen, thank you very much for joining us. World War II veteran, former P-51 pilot, and former PTSD sufferer. Thank you, Jerry, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm available to speak anywhere, at any time, to any group of people, even to individuals. And I'm in Fairfield, Iowa. You can pick up my number at the phone, or you can email me, jerry@warriorwellness.org.
Thank you very much, Jerry, sir. And while we're giving out contact information, Dr. Hagemoser, can you tell us how people find out more about the VA's services for veterans in Iowa?
Well, we would encourage people to call the VA. I guess I'm thinking of the main switchboard. 699-5999 would get to the main switchboard.
Okay. Thank you very much. And Tamara Woods, thank you very much. And to find out more about your course, I'm sure go to the University of Iowa's website.
Correct. Yes.
Tamara Woods, very much. Thank you very much. Teaching a class for veterans called Life After War. When we return, we'll talk more about veterans being a veteran in Iowa, specifically organizations that serve veterans in Iowa. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News.
Being in Iowa is funded in part by Bankers Trust and the Principal Financial Group Foundation. EDU.
And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, winding up our week-long focus about being a veteran in Iowa with conversations about many areas of concern for Iowa veterans. And if you are a veteran, we'd like to hear from you this half hour. Tell us about your experience and the unique challenges that you face. 1-866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or write us an email, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. In this half hour, we're going to be looking at organizations in Iowa that serve veterans. And we're joined by three veterans who are connected with three separate organizations to tell us about those. Kathy Nace is Programs Director at the American Legion of Iowa. She served in the Army from 1980 through 1991. most of those years. Kathy Nace, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having the American Legion here, and thank you for having me.
Also joining us, Bob Staben, benefit specialist with the Iowa Department of Veterans Affairs, was a Navy medic, served just before the Vietnam War, and helps, I understand, Bob, welcome to our program. I understand you help veterans receive benefits and the care they deserve.
Yes, sir. I do a lot of outreach to veterans at speaking engagements and radio programs and various ways of reaching out to veterans and their dependents to see that they get the benefits they may be entitled to.
Okay. Adam Connell is also with us, 23-year-old veteran of the Navy, now a University of Iowa student, secretary of the Student Veterans of America, the University of Iowa chapter, joining us by phone. Adam, are you there?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. Thank you very much for having me, sir.
Thank you very much for being on our program today. Bob, may I start with you? Some might not be aware of it. To go into a little more detail about the main areas the Iowa Department of Veterans Affairs serves our veterans.
Yes. I worked 36 years at the federal building and have done many veterans' claims, widows and veterans and dependents. And I feel that there's a great need to reach out to people. Eventually, when I left the federal building, I was hired on to work for the state of Iowa, and I'm the executive officer there now, the second in command under Jody Timeson, who is the director. And as we continue to do outreach, and I think that's a big thing, it's very necessary to be able to tell veterans and their dependents what types of things they may be entitled to.
Mm-hmm. Do you find a lack of awareness out there, just people, after all these years, perhaps being a veteran for many years, being stateside for many years, just not being aware that the services exist for them?
Absolutely, and that's why we need to do more and more outreach, and I try to encourage people when I go out to do speaking engagements. In fact, I was in Osceola last evening and last week in Sheraton, Iowa. I try to encourage veterans to belong to veterans organizations because veterans organizations have newsletters and meetings, and they talk about those things that veterans need to know about. And from there, they can refer people to the local counties. Each county has a director that is at the grassroots to can assist veterans also. But I think if we have speaking engagements where people can come to and listen to somebody talk and that they can gather and gain lots of different benefits they may be entitled to that they were not aware of.
Do you have in these speaking engagements, Bob, do you have a special benefit that you like to mention that often surprises veterans because they did not know this was something there ready for them?
Well, I think the big one Mr. Hagemoser talked about earlier was post-traumatic stress disorder. I think that there are many people that do not want to speak about those kinds of issues, and it's difficult for them to reach out to admit they have some problems, and hopefully they can talk to somebody to encourage them to seek assistance psychologically to try to overcome these issues of post-traumatic stress disorder. I listened to Mr. Hagemoser earlier, and I appreciate him, and I think he's doing a splendid job in his mental health counseling.
Kathy Nace, let me turn to you, Programs Director at the American Legion of Iowa. American Legion may be a phrase that many Iowans actually know of, but they don't, when asked, probably wouldn't be able to nail some of the activities that you're involved in. So remind us of those.
I can't name all the activities that we're involved in. With the American Legion, it's the old stigma of a bunch of old guys sitting around the bar is really gone by the wayside. We're out in the schools. We're out in the public. We are out
doing what?
Visiting with the kids and visiting with the employers that are hiring these veterans that are coming back that do have maybe some medical issues or even the PTSD issues that Dr. Hagemoser was talking about earlier. And we want to recognize those employers, first of all, for hiring those veterans and giving them a shot at a job, but also allowing them the time off to volunteer. The American Legion is almost always out there in the small towns. We've got 630 Legion posts throughout the state of Iowa. So just about everywhere you go, you see an American Legion post, or they're teamed up with their VFWs or their DAVs and the AMVETs to do color guard and to do honors, or to put the flags out on the 4th of July down on Main Street. Or, of course, coming up this weekend is Memorial Day. I'll be going back to my own hometown and helping them put out 176 flags at the cemetery. And I think that that's part of not only just the community involvement through the American Legion, but I think that also probably helps some of the veterans, our younger veterans, get back involved in the community when they've come back from Iraq and Afghanistan. They don't know what their role is when they come back. And these employers that are allowing them to take an hour off of work to go honor those people is just tremendous. But that's Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Iowa's got the best volunteerism we've ever seen.
Kathy, Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard, in his reports, noted the striking fall-off in members in some veterans organizations, the American Legion in some cases and in some areas as well. How concerned are you about young members not seeing the relevancy for them in this organization?
For us, the last couple of years, it's been a very big concern. And so what we had to do is we had to reach out to our veterans and find out what they wanted and what their needs were so that we could adjust our organization and our activities and our programs to meet those needs so that they would stay involved.
And what are you finding that there are changes? How is the relevancy changing?
How is the relevancy changing?
Well, what are you discovering about younger veterans that is different than older veterans in terms of the type of organization they may need?
Their lives are much busier. When the World War II and the Korean War veterans came back, there was maybe one activity for the kids to go do, and that was American Legion baseball. But now they've got soccer and baseball and track and band and choir and drama. They have all these things going on at the same time, and they're trying to juggle the schedule of family around still wanting to help serve and be involved in their community. And I think the American Legion's programs have adopted that. Things like the flag, just something as simple as the flag essay contest. The veteran can take, a half an hour off of work, go in and talk to the fifth grade class and tell them about what flag etiquette means and what's proper and what's not. Ask them to do a flag essay. Have them judge and give a kid a $300 savings bond. And, when you see that 10-year-old stand in front of a group of veterans at the state convention and read what the flag means to them, not only is that a healing process for the veterans out in the crowd, but that really brings everything together.
Adam Connell, you're joining us by phone, Secretary of the Student Veterans of America, the University of Iowa chapter, 23-year-old veteran of the Navy. I wonder, Adam, if you feel a connection between you, veterans of your age, and older veterans, and whether you see a relevancy. Are you, first of all, a member of the American Legion, the VFW?
No, sir, I am not. That is actually a question that I've been asked a few times, and it's not that I'm not interested. It's just that I'm not at a point in my life where I need any more support. Like, the University of Iowa, sir, does such a great job just giving support to veterans. Like, when a veteran comes back and decides to go back to school, sir, they're not your, 18, 19-year-old right out of high school university student. I mean, they're mid-20s mostly, and they're just different. And the University of Iowa, sir, does such a great job of just, giving the support they need. If you need any, special accommodations for taking your exams and whatnot. Sir, I am not a member, but that's just because I feel that I already have got the amount of support and the amount of camaraderie, sir, that I already have. So.
Adam Connell, how do you think you see the world and your college experience, generally speaking, different from your non-veteran fellow students?
Well, sir, it's very interesting going from having your entire day scheduled for you. You know, you're going to sleep this time to this time. You're going to get up this time to this time. This is when you're going to eat. This is, you know, when you're going to have a little bit of time off. You know, and so I've seen a different side of the world than most of the other students at the University of Iowa, and I just think it maybe gives me like a little extra something. You know, like I know how to make a very regimented schedule. You know, I know how to sit down and be like, okay, you know, today I'm going to go to the library for 8 hours. You know, there is no if, there is, you know, there is no question about it. I'm going to do it. And it's just that was the sort of mindset that I had while I was active duty Navy. And I just think, you know, it's just given me a little bit extra. And it's just so, so nice. So I think that just having that regimented schedule saying, I'm going to do this no matter what.
Sounds like that muscle labeled discipline has been well exercised. And
yes,
you know that you can turn to it whenever you need it in your college experience.
Yes, sir.
Let's go to our phones. Before the hour is over, it's going quickly, 1-866-780-9100, looking for the unique challenges faced by Iowa veterans and their questions today. Jim is joining us from Iowa City. Jim, are you a veteran?
Yes, I am.
Well, welcome to our program, sir. What would you like to talk about?
What's that? Say again.
What would you like to talk about, Jim?
Well, I think I'm a disabled veteran. I was had to retire early with 19 and a half years. And I'm also a nurse from the VA, recently retired. I think one of the problems, first of all, I think I do participate in the American Legion. There is still a problem with the guys going to the Legion and basically self-medicating themselves with too much alcohol. And that still goes on. I think we need even more programs through the American Legion and the VA or VFW about those kind of issues. I see it with the younger vets in particular.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in mental health the last few years as a nurse, and we'd run into problems with this that come in a lot of times with alcohol intoxications that were really high, and we would dry them out, trying to treat their own post-traumatic stress. You know, everybody tries to resolve things on their own. Initially, we still need to work and get that out, that, you know, there is help out there. Another problem that I found personally was some of the maladies that the folks come back with aren't easily diagnosed. Therefore, it makes it difficult to get treatment and disability payments based on that. I know I've had a variety of problems, neuropathies and unusual bowel patterns that were just debilitating and fatigue at times. Finally got some diagnosis, but it took a long time. And it's not the VA's fault or anything like that. It's just difficult. I mean, it's just like, how many years did it come up with before we got the diagnosis of post-traumatic stress syndrome? I know my uncle dealt with it terribly after World War II.
Jim, thank you very much for your experience joining us from Iowa City. A number of other callers joining us, but Jim, thank you from Iowa City. Let's go to Tammy in Mason City. Hi, Tammy.
Hi. I could go on for hours about the things that I've learned. I am the only child of a Vietnam veteran who was a combat veteran, and my parents divorced when I was very young, I think basically because my dad was completely unable to show any sort of emotion. He had emotionally closed down. I grew up with him. I never quite understood him. And then through a series of connections and weird accidents, about 7 or 8 people that he had served with all got together, and we started attending reunions. And we go once a year, and it's always about the same handful of guys that are in his little group, in addition to other people who are in the same unit and things of that nature at different times. All of these individuals had problems coping when they came back, ranging from alcoholism to, again, emotionally shutting down, something that's very unique to the Vietnam veteran as opposed to current veterans, individuals serving now. Individuals serving now can locate the people that they served with in a Twitter, in an email. Boom, they know where everybody is. They know where to find everyone. World War II veterans don't have any of that ability, have a great difficulty finding other individuals, a lot of times because they don't have computer skills, things like that. Vietnam vets are in a unique position to where they can start looking each other up. They can start looking on websites in regards to their own units and things like that and start to reconnect that way. These people, when we get together, there's no one closer. I had never heard a single word about the time he spent in service till the very first reunion, and I heard things that made me weep for his pain and the pain of his buddies that he served with and the things that he went through. I can tell you that after these reunions, which again we go to yearly, a lot of the men go home and have nightmares that last for weeks, even though they would trade them off for the reunion anytime, and it's worth it to them. And I'm so grateful, and they've helped each other with their healing. One thing I can say for sure is that Iowa does have one of the best VA programs in the country, based on what the his buddies say. And my dad did go through the inpatient PTSD program here in Iowa. I forget how many weeks it was. I want to say 6-7 weeks. It's something not everyone would be able to get off work or to be able to afford to do, but it put my dad in a position where he could start dealing with everything in his life, from losing a sibling, changes, you know, as he gets older and in his health. It put him in the best position in his life, and I say my dad did not find peace until he was 64 years old.
Tammy,
Now he knows what it's like to be able to relax and to take things into account. He's a very, very happy man. It was a hell of a road.
Tammy, thank you for that story, that wonderful story of healing from Mason City. Tammy, the daughter of a Vietnam veteran. We have just a brief amount of time. I want to get around to each of you. Kathy, let me start with you, because we haven't mentioned that the American Legion of Iowa, as Tammy reminds us, is also a value to families of veterans.
Absolutely. Very, very quickly, one of the examples, the tornadoes. And Dr. Hagemoser had mentioned about the PTSD, not just from being from combat veterans, but also things like the flooding and the tornadoes and the terrible things that we've experienced. We have things like a national emergency fund for those members. We a lot of the PTSD ones that are just trying to get over a hump, and while they're going through treatment, they need a little bit of financial assistance to help get their families through. Or while they're deployed, maybe their children need something here. You know, we had something as simple as a spouse that went to mow the lawn the day after her husband left and pulled the lawnmower cord out of the, you know, out of the lawnmower. And she was in a panic, had no idea how she was going to do that. So we've got American Legion veterans that are just up the street from her that in 10 minutes they go down there, they fix it all up for her, don't charge her a dime. But those are little things that the American Legion volunteers have stepped up to do, especially during this time.
Okay. Adam, a brief comment. What's in your future specifically concerning the military after your college experience?
Yes, sir. I actually applied to the University of Iowa's College of Nursing earlier this spring and find out if I get accepted in July. I will be going back in active duty as a commissioned officer in the United States Navy Nursing Corps. Sir, I am a lifer for sure.
Okay. Adam, thank you.
Years, sir.
Thank you very much for your service and for joining our program today.
Thanks,
Adam, Bob Staben, just a minute or so left. I know you've worked for many, many years, decades for AMVETS. Closing word about that organization, perhaps, since we haven't mentioned it.
The AMVETS, I spent 36 years working in the federal building for the AMVETS and as their executive officer and the national service officer. And I found that through all those experiences, I learned a lot about veterans' issues and benefits. And you know, this VA system is so complex. We have a federal level, we have state level, we have county level, and people just need to know who they can go to seek that kind of assistance. There's so many things to know about in the VA system, and you can't just allow people to just know those things. We have to have more outreach and efforts of organizations to help reach out to these people and have the answers for these people. We have a lot of widows out there that may be entitled to benefits and just on and on it goes. There's no end to it. And, of course, when I go out and speak to groups, I kind of just hit the surface of many things. And hopefully, see, many veterans think that they have to be in combat to receive benefits from the VA, but that's not necessarily so. You're owned by the government during the time you're in the military, so any kind of injury that's not misconduct is a legitimate disability if it's a chronic problem, and a lot of people don't understand that. And so they need somebody they can talk to, somebody they can touch base with be able to seek out what these benefits may be.
Bob Stabens, Benefits Specialist with the Iowa Department of Veterans Affairs. Thank you for joining us. I want to mention, too, we didn't get to talk about it at length or specifically, but, of course, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, a tremendous organization helping veterans in Iowa as well. Also, thanks to Kathy Nace, Programs Director at the American Legion of Iowa, and we thank to Adam Connell, the Secretary of the Student Veterans of America, the University of Iowa chapter. A lot of calls we didn't get to. We apologize for not getting to the calls. We'll have to make sure we cook up another veterans show in the near future. Adam, Bob, Kathy, thank you very much for joining us for this hour.
Thank you very much for having me, sir.
And The Exchange is produced by Alex Hoyer, production, and Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today by Julie Englander. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. And we have some special theme music going out today. Join us again on Tuesday. Monday, we have special Memorial Day programming scheduled for this time slot. On Monday, you can join us again when we'll talk about video games as kids go into summer vacation. The do's and don'ts with those. Join us on Tuesday. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News.
Being in Iowa is funded in part by Bankers Trust and the Principal Financial Group Foundation.